Being a woman in politics, coming in as a woman with the mindset you've got, I want to become a mayor. How did you come to that?
There's a huge risk when you enter politics that something can go wrong. Probably the best analogy I've heard is that you're essentially strapped to a bomb, because if that bomb goes up, the whole lot of you go up. Especially with social media, it's just so easy for people to make whatever statements they want, whether they're true or not. It can be really difficult to defend that as well, because you don't want to lower yourself to their standards by having a slinging match on social media. And the other thing you don't want to do is draw more attention to what they're saying, even if it is rubbish. And then I've got children. There's a potential that they might see some very negative commentary about me, and that might affect them.
What part of your upbringing do you believe shaped the leader you've become today?
You know, living with my dad and realizing that the conservative approach and really trying to restrain, particularly daughters, really shaped my thinking. But then the support from my mum's family, who really encouraged, you know, you have options in life. Your life is your own. Do what you need to do and not worry so much about what the family's going to say.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Discover You podcast. Today is a very special day. I wanted to start out by giving a shout out to our sponsor for today, which is the City of Palmerston. Just want to give our sponsor a shout out to a sponsor who is not only holding it together, the community, but also giving back to podcasts like ours, and wanting to see the community grow, wanting to see the people in the community grow. And because of that, we've got a special guest today. And many of you guys already know who that is, but just tune in and watch the conversation and watch as it goes. It's going to be a fun and exciting conversation. We're going to see a side of her that you guys maybe you're not aware of and you're not sure of. What we're hoping today is to raise awareness and to be able to share her story and share who she is and what she believes and what she's doing for the city of Palmerston. I'm joined today with Athena.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm good. Very good.
Good to have you today. How did you feel when I reached out to you? I said, look, Athena, let's do this podcast. How did you feel?
Oh, look, I had some questions, but then I was like, oh, yeah, this is a good opportunity. Get a bit of my story out there. Let people in the community know a bit more about me, because obviously people know that I am the mayor of the city of Palmerston, just been recently elected again, third term as mayor and fourth term on the council. Mm. I guess most people wouldn't have a clue about who I am. And also, you know, some of the social things out there that affect how I operate as mayor, and yeah, good opportunity. So thank you.
Yes. And I know you just did a mini introduction, Ray. I personally didn't want to start by introducing everything that you are, and I wanted to give you that opportunity to be able to introduce yourself, but in a much deeper level. So one of my first questions, and I know the viewers watching from their screen, there's those who know who you are and knows what you've done for the city of Palmerston, and those who are still have questions about who you are, what you are, what you believe in, and what you've done for the city of Palmerston. And one of the first thing I want to do is ask you a very simple question, which is quite deep, and say, who is Athena?
Who am I? Lots of different aspects to who I am.
Yeah.
I am a mum. I have two teenagers, and I'm married to Shane, and we were married in 2001. So
that was a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By today's standards. I've lost track of time. We were together, though, for 6 years before that. So
yeah,
we met as teenagers, and we're still together now, been through a lot. He served in the Australian Army for over 11 years,
yeah,
which is, you know, quite a difficult lifestyle as well. I'm also the daughter of a Greek migrant.
Yeah.
So my cultural heritage is Greek, although my grandfather and all of my great-grandparents were from the Trapezunta region, which is now in modern-day Turkey.
Yeah. And The one of the first thing you mentioned there is you mentioned that you were a mother. So you got two kids. Yep. And how old are your kids?
My daughter's 14 and my son's 17.
Yeah. Were they all born and raised in Darwin?
In Darwin. So Shane and I moved here 21 years ago.
Yeah.
We got a posting up here with the Army.
Yeah.
So I moved up in October of 2004. And I already had a job before we left Sydney, which was great. So I just came up and started working, and then Shane followed up about a month later. Our children were then born here. So as soon as we moved here, we had a defence house in Driver, which is one of the Palmerston suburbs.
I live in Driver.
Do you?
Yeah.
And then probably about 6 months later, we moved into the house we're still in now, at Marlow Lagoon. So
it's a good suburb. There's a lot of midges, isn't it?
There's a lot of midges, but it is good because you have a lot of space. And, you know, I guess it is our dream home. We made the big leap to buy exactly what we knew we wanted to raise a family in,
yeah,
in Marlow Lagoon. So there's a few, obviously, little things you always change when you, you know, get your own place. But, yeah, it was really good. We were also priced out of the Sydney market at the time, so you know, we weren't able to buy where we wanted to live in Sydney. And the crime actually in Sydney was quite significant when we decided it was time to go. Shane also had to get posted. And even though they offered us other postings in New South Wales, we decided to come up to Darwin. And that was following a 10-day vacation, essentially. Shane was on R&R from a deployment to East Timor.
Yeah.
And we came up to the Northern Territory for 10 days, up to Darwin for 10 days, and checked it out and then took a posting. But even before that, we were very keen travellers around Australia. So we always camping and forward driving and hiking and doing things like that. So,
oh, so you had an exciting life.
Yeah, the chance for adventure and coming up to the top end was just a really good opportunity.
Yeah. So I want to put these pieces together and just paint out your journey. So it starts off, your daughter of a Greek migrant who migrated in Australia in...
in the 1960s.
1960s, oh, that's ages.
So my dad was 14 years old when he migrated to Australia.
Yeah.
He had to learn English very rapidly.
Yeah.
And then went on to do an apprenticeship at the... steelworks in Port Kembla, just south of Wollongong.
Oh, man. Close to Sydney.
So that was my dad. He migrated with his family. My grandfather, his father was born in Trapezunta, which was part of the ancient Greek world. So around 3,000 years ago was first colonised by some Greek people. And so my family had lived in that region since that time.
Oh, wow.
And then following the First World War, there was some upheaval in that area with the Turks, and they were forcibly displaced. So there was a huge population exchange between Christians and Muslims in Turkey and Greece.
Yeah.
And they were sent to northern Greece, which would have been quite difficult for that family at the time because they didn't actually speak modern Greek.
Really?
So, you know, displaced to a country where they didn't actually speak the local language.
Yeah.
And my dad was born in Greece. My mum was born in Australia, but she's also of similar heritage from that sort of region, the southern Black Sea region where Turkey sits today.
Yeah.
And her parents migrated to Australia in the 1950s separately.
Yeah,
which was quite interesting, and there's a whole story behind why my mother's father moved to Australia.
Yeah,
and that involved like internal conflicts in Greece when he was growing up, and he decided that he was just going to leave Greece for Australia to get a better life. So he moved out here on his own.
Yeah,
and separately, my grandmother was a woman of adventure.
Is that what you are adventurous?
Probably, because her family, like Greeks, are traditionally very conservative.
Yeah.
But her family weren't, and they encouraged all of their daughters to do whatever they wanted, get educated, and go off and explore the world. So she jumped on a ship, 3 months sailing to Australia.
Really? Crazy.
Unmarried. She didn't have an arranged marriage waiting for her in Australia, like a lot of Greek women who were sent from Greece to Australia had at that time. And met another woman on that ship who, you know, they got along really, really well, became best friends on that journey. And when her best friend announced that she was met a guy and was getting married, my grandmother wanted to meet all of him and, you know, who is this person and what's he about?
Yeah.
And that's how she met my grandfather, because he was friends with the groom. Yeah. So that's how they met, and my mum was then born in Australia.
Wow. And you know all that story from?
From my grandparents. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Do you guys have a similar culture as the African culture where grandparents always sit around the fire and always tell stories and so forth?
Not so much, I think, but just as I grew up and was curious about some of their stories and things, they would tell me. Yeah, my grandmother really was a woman of adventure. She won like this little award on the ship for, you know, Miss Personality on the ship or something. And there's photos of her in different ports around the world with local people. She was, you know, posing and just loved meeting new people and getting around. So, yep.
Perfect. So, child of migrant parents who migrated in Australia in the 1960s, born in Sydney, is that correct?
Yeah, in Wollongong.
Wollongong,
yep.
So that's quite close to Sydney. And then what year did you come to Darwin?
2004.
So you met your husband in Sydney?
No.
No?
No.
Is there a love story there?
Well, I mentioned, like, you know, Greeks are very traditionally quite conservative.
Yeah.
And my dad's family were very conservative.
Yeah.
My mum's family were not. And so over time, I guess there was quite a bit of differences in my family's marriage arrangements with my dad and my mum. Didn't see eye to eye. My parents separated when I was 14. And mum was actually from South Australia originally. So my mum and I moved back to South Australia to be closer to her family.
Yeah.
And interestingly, it was a really odd decision at the time, but the courts allowed my sister to stay with my father. So a really strange situation, because I was in South Australia with mum and my sister was in Wollongong with my dad. So from around that age, we kind of grew up separately.
Yeah.
So we didn't have our teenage years together, although we're in contact quite a lot.
Yeah.
And because I think because my mum's family had a much more relaxed expectation or, you know, not so conservative, it was really encouragement about studying and being independent, and, you know, making sure that I did the best of everything. And that was encouraged by both my grandfather and my grandmother, my mum's parents.
Yeah.
Whereas my dad's family, I think, was so much more conservative, and there were probably more expectations to get married and have children rather than focus on education in some of those aspects of that family. So I had the opportunity when mum left my father to really decide who I wanted to be and, you know, what direction I wanted to head in.
Yeah.
And I am, you know, fairly smart, so I knuckled down, studied really hard, and finished high school in a town called Gawler in South Australia, just north of Adelaide.
Yeah.
Finished as the ducks of my year.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Then straight off to uni, studied a Bachelor of Environmental Management.
Is that all down in Sydney or Wollongong?
Was in Adelaide.
Adelaide, okay.
So at the University of Adelaide, I studied Bachelor of Environmental Management, and I met my husband when I was in year 12 through a school friend.
Oh, so year 12 high school?
Year 12 high school.
Oh, Damn, long time coming.
Yeah, it was. And we're still in contact with our friend who introduced us. Shane and our friend had both joined the army. Shane lived nearby anyway, and that's how I met Shane.
Wow.
So, and then, finished university. Shane got posted to Sydney, so I joined him in Sydney when I finished my first degree.
Yeah, wow. What a story. I just want to track back a little bit to talk about your childhood. You say when you were 14, correct me if I'm wrong, when you were 14, your parents got divorced.
Yep.
How tough would that have been on you?
I guess I was one of those people who could see the cracks in the marriage.
Yeah.
And it was probably a relief for me, but my sister really struggled with it because she was only 9. Oh, wow. But I guess as the older sibling, I could see some of the issues going on. I was actually concerned about my own well-being if Mum had stayed there. Mm-hmm. Because I was concerned that I would be married off.
Oh, arranged marriage.
Arranged marriage or, heavily encouraged, but you don't have any other choice, marriage. Because you know they don't like to call it an arranged marriage, right?
Yeah.
But do you have a choice?
Yeah.
And I had an older cousin who had been through something like this.
Yeah.
And then, there was this stark realization that I was the next oldest girl in the family. And so my time would come too when, some strange Greek boy might come knocking on the door wanting to date me or marry me. And it wouldn't have been my decision. It would have essentially been a family decision. So that was when Mum decided that, nope, she wasn't going to see that happen to myself.
Yeah.
And my sister, so she made the decision to leave and I went with her.
Yeah.
So I stayed with Mum. I think my sister didn't understand the complexities of, what had happened.
Yeah.
And she decided to remain with my dad.
Yeah. Well, as a 9-year-old.
It's a confusing time. I think at that age you don't really understand and you don't start to grow your own personality probably until you're a teenager, really.
Yeah.
And then start to think about, what's going to happen when you leave school and, where you want to take your own life, the direction you want to take your life in. And so, she was still in primary school, so I don't think she actually sort of saw the picture.
Well, even for you to be able to see that picture at the age of 14 is quite remarkable.
Well, Dad was, because he was very conservative, so he was very strict. So, there were things I wasn't allowed to do.
Yeah.
Very normal things like, go out with your friends or, go to the beach for a swim.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't do those things. I did because I'd tell Mum that I was doing them and Mum was like, okay, but don't make sure you're back before your father knows.
Don't tell Dad.
But
classic.
Yeah, but it was like, and you know right from wrong, so you're like, all right, I'm going to go to the library or I'm going to go hang out with my friends. I've told Mum, but it's not right that I can't tell my father because he'll get angry, right?
Yeah.
So you know these things at that age.
Yeah.
And even when I spoke to my mum's parents about it after she left, my grandfather was like, well, if you don't know right from wrong by the time you're 14 – there's something seriously wrong. You really should have the attitude of an adult by the time you're 14 and know where you're heading, what your life's desires are and what you need to do. So
Don't you think that's a bit of a tough advice? If you look at 14-year-olds right now and they come to you as a mayor and say, Athena, I need some advice. I'm a 14-year-old individual.
Study hard, think about what you want to do and go for it. Yeah, that's my advice.
That would be your advice.
Don't be lazy. Don't be a bludger. Don't cheat. Just focus on what it is you want to achieve in life. And if you don't know, just study until you work out what it is you want to do.
Yeah. So study something until you
study something because education is probably your doorway to everything. If you get an education, then doors will open for you and you'll have something that you can move forward in your life with.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the wrong decision, we'll go back and study and do something else. But, you know, my grandparents, my mum's parents were very progressive and encouraged, you know, responsibility even at that age, at 14. No, you know what you need and you know what you should be doing. Go and do it.
And so, that's where your mindset comes from.
Yeah.
Of being a go-getter. You know what you want and you go get it.
That's right. Yeah, but I was encouraged to do so.
Yeah.
By my mum's family. And it wasn't just, you know, my grandparents and my mum. There was extended family as well. So my aunts, even my grandmother's sister, who grew up in a very progressive Greek family, was a Greek businesswoman in the 1940s and 50s, which was unheard of. But she was encouraged to do so by her family because they didn't hold back their women. They let them get educated and do those things. Mm-hmm. So when you're surrounded by that sort of supportive environment, you can do anything. And I had support at school as well because the teachers knew that I was quite bright. So I got encouragement right throughout high school to, you know, just keep working on it, doing the right things and studying and given opportunities. So high school, I was the student representative on the Equity and Social Justice Committee.
Yeah,
I was on the student council. I was on the senior school management committee as well as being the ducks of the year.
It sounds like who you are today. Actually, before I ask this question, I want to ask another question just so that you can clarify something. So what part of your upbringing do you believe shaped who you, the leader you've become today?
Oh. I think, you know, living with my dad and realizing that the conservative approach and really trying to restrain, particularly daughters, really shaped my thinking. But then the support from my mum's family who really encouraged, you know, you have options in life. Your life is your own.
Mm-hmm.
Go and study. Do what you need to do. And not worry so much about what the family's going to say because it's not their life, it's yours.
Mm-hmm.
And just that, you know, seeing those differences. And I know it happens in a lot of cultures. It's obviously not just Greek culture, but you see it in a lot of other cultures where they still try and restrain the women in the family and the young girls from education and doing what they want to do to achieve in life. So, yeah, it's not just Greek culture. I think it comes from a lot of different other cultures.
So I did a bit of digging around. So 2015, that's your first time getting involved with the council in Palmerston. And then 2018, you got elected as the mayor. And then 2021, re-elected again, and now again 2025. Being a woman in politics, I personally, just from what I know, politics is usually a male-dominated kind of field. Coming in as a woman with the mindset you've got and coming in and saying, hey, I want to become a mayor. How did you come to that?
Interesting, because obviously I have a very strong sense of social justice and what's right and wrong.
Yeah.
So we started raising our family in Marlow Lagoon in Palmerston.
Mm-hmm.
It's fair to say I had a few very negative interactions with the council early on.
Really?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, by that stage, I had two children. But through my career, which we now haven't spoken about my career, I was a leader in my industry as well.
Yeah.
And had staff I managed, strategic plans to manage, and the workload of a team, budgets to manage. And so it was quite interesting then coming across a government agency, which was a council who didn't reflect the values that you come to expect to as a public servant, which I was. I was a public servant in New South Wales and also in the Northern Territory. So I had some incidents with the council. We clashed quite significantly. Very trivial things, but you kind of got an understanding of how they treated the community right then and there. So one incident involved our driveway at Marlow Lagoon, it was a spoon drain. In the wet season, it was always full of water because there was water just running through it continuously, and it fill up with slime.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get out of my car safely to open the gate to get into my own property because I'd slip in the slime. I'd take my shoes off. I tried different shoes. I tried everything, but it was just impossible and it was really dangerous.
Yeah.
So we asked the council to come and sort it out. The driveway's on their side of the fence.
Yeah.
And I had an older white man come down there and tell me that I shouldn't wear high heels in my driveway.
Nick. Long day.
And I just was like, I don't think you realize who you're dealing with, buddy. And so I threatened him, suing them. Number one, the comment completely inappropriate. Number two, it's a safety risk and I've now raised it with the council. So it might not be me who injures themselves in my driveway. It could be anyone else in the community.
Yeah.
And they've got a responsibility to deal with that. And he was there telling me I shouldn't wear high heels.
Yeah.
And I really wasn't a high heel wearing kind of person anyway. So it was just the strangest thing. And then another incident when the council wanted to move what is now down at Archer at the waste transfer facility into Marlow Lagoon.
Yeah.
So we fought pretty hard with the community to see that stopped. And then in 2015, the council announced that they wanted to change the rating system in Palmerston and very thinly veiled as community consultation. But the net outcome was that the rates in Marlow Lagoon were going to increase by 80%, which is a huge increase in 1 year, so nearly double.
Yeah, that's crazy.
There was a lot of community outcry and, you know, people being upset, wondering whether the council could legally do that with the rates. And I worked with a lot of data, so that was where I ended up after my environmental management degree. I did a lot of data work, so analysing data, managing databases and systems, and in Northern Territory helping scientists build scientific databases.
Yeah.
So my question wasn't, can they do it legally, but why do they need to do it? So, you know, started looking into council decision making and what they were doing and where they were spending money, and quickly realised that there were some significant governance issues in that council. The community put a lot of pressure on the council, and one of the councillors resigned. So that left an opportunity for a by-election. And, you know, I was sitting around the table with my friends and we're like, someone needs to run. Who's going to run? And they looked at me and they're like, you do it. It's like, I've got a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old. You can't possibly expect me to run for council. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, you can do it. You can do it. And we'll back you up. So I nominated for the by-election in 2015 and was elected to that council.
So that's how we all started.
And that's how I got onto the council. And I don't know how much research you did, but that council was eventually dismissed by the minister for negligence.
Oh, tell us some more about that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there I was on the inside. You know, I could see what was going on from the outside through some of their decision-making and the way they were spending money. But you don't really get a good picture until you're on the inside and see a lot more about what's going on.
Yeah.
And in the end, they made a decision to enter into a contract for a multi-story car park with a developer.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to borrow money to pay for that car park.
Yeah, right.
The contract that they entered into didn't have a clause about finance, so making sure that they were able to secure money. And they had not received permission from the minister to borrow any money either. And they didn't have sufficient reserves to pay for the car park. So the council would have technically been insolvent. And I ended up reporting them to the minister.
Wow.
So that was basically what happened. But it was about 18 months to get to that point. And having identified a lot of problems in governance and a lot of the other things that the council was doing at the time, and trying to raise these issues with the government, but they didn't really take any notice until the council got into a lot of strife with this multi-storey car park and their ability to finance it.
Already I see something that's quite tough that you did there. Going and reporting, that in itself, there's a level of peer pressure and there's a level of fear that many people would have to be able to go against and put themselves out there and say, look, this is wrong, and this needs to be changed. Where's that fire coming from?
I think, you know, that real strong sense of what's right and wrong, yeah, and that community justice as well, because this was going to affect not just Marlow Lagoon with our 80% rate increase, but every single ratepayer as well. And there's a huge risk when you enter politics that something can go wrong. And probably the best analogy I've heard is that you're essentially strapped to a bomb, because if that bomb goes up, the whole lot of you go up. And I knew very well that in the Local Government Act, the only option the minister had was to suspend, investigate and sack the entire council, not just, you know, one or two people who may have been doing the wrong thing, but everyone. And so I knew it was going to be one of those issues where I'm just going to have to sacrifice myself for the greater good. And that's what I did. I had to report them to the minister. I knew that there would be an investigation. And then I had enough already that I knew that there's no way that they were going to survive it. And I was dismissed along with the rest of the council.
You obviously made some enemies from that.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So how do you manage people not liking who you are as a person because of the things you're doing behind integrity and honesty?
It's really tricky, but you just need to still hold yourself to that standard. So, and it is really hard, especially with social media, to not fall into the trap of getting involved in the mudslinging on social media or any of that antagonisation and harassment, and just try and hold yourself out of that mess. You know, there are still people in the community, I think, who would be very upset about what had happened. Probably don't appreciate that, you know, if you're involved in something you like council, you have a lot of obligations to be doing the right thing and overseeing the business of the council and doing it appropriately and with a lot of care and diligence. So I'm sure that they're still quite angry about it, but I think now, third term as mayor and the changes that you've seen in Palmerston while I've been the mayor and directing how things should go, have been quite significant. And I think they, you know, they stand on their own to say, well, it was clearly the right decision, having a different aspect of governing the council and how we do things. Yeah. Has been a real benefit to everyone in our community.
Yeah. You're quite a tough woman, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, don't pick on me because it's, it might not end well. Somebody else. I'm happily tell people I've never had a speeding ticket and I've never had a parking fine. So, never. No.
So if we go looking around, we'll see no speeding ticket.
No.
Not even on Tagger Brendan?
No.
Oh, damn.
No. So, you know, you really have to hold yourself to a much higher standard when you're in public life.
Yeah.
Because even the smallest thing could see me on the front page of the NT News or on the national news. And,
definitely.
We see that a lot, and that seems to then bring down people's opinion of politics and councils and...
Giving a shout out to our sponsor for today, the City of Palmerston. Just want to give our sponsor a shout out to a sponsor who is not only holding it together, the community, but also giving back to podcasts like ours and wanting to see the community grow, wanting to see the people in the community grow. What would you say to somebody that goes on social media and writes negative comments to someone like yourself who's trying to do the good for the public and good for the community?
Yeah, I don't think those people have a good appreciation that politicians are people as well. Mm-hmm. Especially with social media, it's just so easy for people to make whatever statements they want, whether they're true or not. Mm-hmm. It can be really difficult to defend that as well because, as I mentioned to you, you don't want to get stuck in the mud. You don't want to lower yourself to their standards by having a slinging match on social media. And so, there's a little bit where you can't really defend yourself too much. Because then you do lower yourself to their standard. But then there's a whole lot of people who are reading this commentary and might actually believe that it's true as well.
Yeah.
And the other thing you don't want to do is draw more attention to what they're saying, even if it is rubbish, because if you draw more attention to it, then more people will see it, more people might believe it. Social media, I think, has its positive aspects because it does allow you to reach out to a large portion of the community. But there's a lot of negative aspects about it. And then, I've got children.
Mm-hmm.
They're not on Facebook, but I know they use other social media, Snapchat, Discord, stuff that I've got no clue about. But there's a potential that they might see some very negative commentary about me, and that might affect them.
Do you fear that?
Do I what?
Is that a fear?
Sometimes, but then I also think about their school friends as well because they might read stuff, or their parents might say stuff to them, and then it manifests at school.
Yeah.
So there's been instances of quite significant bullying with my children at school, and you got it right. I'm a pretty scary woman, so.
I don't know about scary, but you're definitely a strong woman, that's for sure.
You don't want me turning up at school with a complaint about bullying or something like that because I do have a very strong sense of social justice. So, if children are being bullied, then it needs to just stop and it needs to stop immediately.
Let me ask you this. What's one lesson that your children have taught you that politics hasn't?
Probably to be more patient.
What do you mean by that? Elaborate.
I think because I think very rapidly, it's like, quick, do it. Let's get onto it.
Yep.
Children are much slower. You just need to, back off.
Yeah.
Let them, do their thing. They'll get there. Take their time. I think that's just the patience with children. Because, go clean your room. Yeah. As a mother, you're like, clean your room. And I don't know. My daughter didn't clean her room for probably 3 years, I'd say. I'd be like, do you want a hand? No. Okay. So, it's like, all right. You go, here's a bag. Throw some rubbish away. And she'd come out with a tiny little thing like this and you open the door and you're like, all right, not enough rubbish taken out, but okay, I'll just throw that in the bin. You sure you don't want help? No. Leave me alone, okay? So patience. And then one day she came out, she's like, can you help me clean my room? Okay, yep, let's do it. And anyway.
Merit's supposed to be teaching you patience.
No, the children. The children teach me patience. So
marriage.
And then marriage.
Yeah. That's what people say. They say marriage is where you learn most of your patience from.
That's probably true as well. But yeah. But my daughter, eventually we cleaned out her room. I don't know how much rubbish we threw out, but it was like lots, bags and bags and bags. And
crazy.
But, eventually she just went, yep, time. It's time to do this. So, you can't push people to do things.
Mm-hmm. You got to wait for their time when they're ready.
Yep.
Okay, so that's one great lesson. From talking to you, what I get a sense of, very strong, outgoing woman, knows what she wants, is a go-getter, big advocate for women in politics, big advocate for community, good sense of justice, and all that is picturing tough.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've got a question for you. When's the last time you cried?
Probably at my grandparents' funeral, I'd say. I don't cry often.
You don't cry often?
No. No. Usually sad things. Funerals, you know, if I hear someone's passed away, that's probably when I'd cry.
By the way, is that right? Wouldn't your grandparents pass away? Is that recent?
No. I have one grandmother still alive.
Yeah.
But the other grandparents passed away quite a few years ago.
Yeah. So that was a few years ago, last time you dropped some tears.
Yep. I'm not cruel and heartless, though. Don't.
Well, I'm trying to understand. Like, I'm trying to understand the emotional side of you.
Probably just a higher sense of, I don't know, emotional intelligence, because sometimes you just can't control things, and you know that's, you just have to realize that something's out of your control. It's out of your control, but you can do whatever's in your power.
Yeah.
And that's the same message that I tell the council as well. You know, we have our legislative powers. We can make effective change in this sphere.
Yeah,
these are our responsibilities. Then there's another sphere where you can influence decision making of the other levels of government, other people. And then there's stuff which is going to be completely out of your control, and you need to choose where you put your energy.
That's big, right?
Yeah.
Where you put your energy.
So you put your energy into the things that you can absolutely control and make a difference on. You put your energy into, not as much energy, but a little bit more energy into the things that you can influence.
Yeah.
The things that you can't influence at all, and you're like, I could spend all the time in the world arguing about that issue, but I'm not going to have any impact at all. You probably shouldn't spend all of your energy and time trying to influence that, because you're not going to make any difference. It's a hard thing to say.
It's a balance, yeah.
But if you put most of your energy where you can make a difference, then you will see results. And so that's how we've operated the council for about the last 8 years.
Yeah.
This is our realm of responsibility. This is our realm of influence. And then there's things that we just don't get involved in.
Yeah. And that's how you live your personal life as well. You only
control things. I think so. You know, I can't be fussed about stuff that happens, you know, other people.
Yeah.
It's, you know, what can I control within my own household?
Yeah.
In our relationships with my husband and the kids, with our extended family, but yeah. And you know, you can't help death as you get older, and you realize that, you know, death is a part of life, and it's very sad when it happens, and, you know, you lose people forever, but it's inevitable. Everyone's got their infinite time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what you do with that time that, I guess, really counts. So, you know, and I think I've done a lot in my life. Yeah. I completed a law degree while I was mayor too. So
yeah, we're going to get into that as well.
And I just think, I've got one opportunity at this life, and I'm going to make the most of it and focus on what I can control, what I can be responsible for, and, you know, what I can influence, rather than things which I won't be able to make an impact on.
So a mother, love your family and do so much for them in politics, do so much for the city of Palmerston. Outside of all this, what do you do? Do you have any
hobbies?
Hobbies, yeah.
I'm a scout leader.
Scout leader?
Yes.
We got scouts in Palmerston?
We do. Yeah. We meet down at the Palmerston Game Fishing Club on a Monday night. Yeah, and I've been involved in scouts for about 8 or 9 years now.
Yeah.
Yep. A Cub Scout leader.
How did you get in there?
Well, you know, you have children, they get involved in different activities and things like that. My children weren't sporty.
Yeah.
We tried, but it just wasn't them.
Yeah.
We tried scouts. They really liked it. Shane and I were, you know, very keen outdoor people, had been doing a lot of camping and travelling around, seeing bits of Australia for many years. Actually, that was quite interesting. We used to go camping in the same places when we were teenagers before we met each other as well.
Dang.
And, yeah, I do remember times when him and his friends were annoying us at, you know, some campground in South Australia. And
this is why this was early on as you met him, before you guys were
before there? I met him, yeah, I used to go camping with my friends, and I remember this group of army cadets being nuisances in the state forest where we were camping.
And he was like,
that was me and my friends. I'm like, yeah, you weren't hiding very well. We could see you.
Maybe he already had his eye on you from a while.
Oh, maybe.
Who knows?
My destiny or something. Yeah, so we got involved with scouts, and because, you know, camping and outdoors was something that we were quite interested in. And then I volunteered to be on the parent committee of scouts, and then I became a leader.
Yeah.
So I do that. I like to sew, and I do some crocheting. Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yes. So when I got time, which isn't all that much, but occasionally I'll do some sewing or some crochet.
Yeah. Sounds like you're living quite a full life. Do you have what's your happiest memory?
Gee, I don't know.
You have a moment that you look back and like, yeah, that was good. I was really happy back then.
Probably lots of happy moments. I mean,
tell us one. Tell us one story.
Oh. No. I really enjoyed school.
And when you're saying school, you're talking about university or high school?
High school, you know, getting my year 12 marks. That was like, you know, did better than I expected, even though I was, you know, quite smart. So that was like a really proud moment. And just knowing that, you know, from then on things will be good and I'll get into university and I can do what I want.
You know, just on that, you know, I tried super hard to get into to get a really good high school score, and I ended up getting an ATAR of 47.
Oh.
And I got super depressed. There.
I know, there's so much pressure, isn't there?
It was. So that was quite tricky for me back then.
Yeah, it would have been devastating. Oh, won't tell you what my ATAR was. You probably won't talk to me again.
Nah. I was a high achiever all across until year 12.
Oh, right.
Something happened. I don't know what happened. But that period was, looking back at it, it's the most... this is the most grateful moment ever. I look back at it with so much gratitude just because it's made me the man that I am today.
Yeah.
Like, because of that, a lot of the arrogance has gone off. I can see people and have more sympathy, more understanding, more empathy, and I can connect with people much more. And and I've got this fire of an achiever now, because before, everything used to come super easy, and then that moment happened, and it was a wake up call. Like,
that would it would have been devastating.
At the time, it was like achiever, 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 and then a year of like, what's going on?
Oh,
but I'm good now.
Oh, that's good. See, I think I would have. Yeah, I don't think I would have coped, because I knew. There's a lot of expectation on me in year 12 as well.
Yeah.
Because they explained to the whole year level that their marks get scaled based on the highest mark in the class, the lowest mark in the class, and then they fit everyone into that bell-shaped curve.
Correct.
And so everyone just in the whole class just turned around and looked at me. They're like, it's all up to you, Athena. I'm like, why me? And they're like, because if you don't do well in these exams, we're all going to get scaled down. And I was like,
that's the pressure you were getting.
That was the pressure. And I actually didn't eat for 2 weeks during our year 12 exams, because I was so sick, like nauseous from the pressure of having to do well in year 12, because the rest of my classmates were relying on me to do really well so all of their marks could be scaled up. And like, I must have lost about 10 kilos in that 2 weeks because I just, every time I looked at food, I was like, I'm going to vomit.
Even sushi.
Even sushi. I was just like, no, can't do it. And mum was like, you have to eat something. I'm like, I can't. And as soon as my last exam was over, I'm like, feed me. I'm hungry. Feed me. Yep.
Oh, so year 12 high school, that was the most exciting part of it. One of the memories you really look back to and you're like...
I think so, because it was, you know, when mum left dad,
yeah,
there was a very clear understanding that for me that
yeah.
If I didn't want to go back to my dad...
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to learn to stand up on my own 2 feet,
mm-hmm.
and education was the way to do it.
So that was your outlet.
That was it. It was get an education, get yourself a good job, and then you don't have to ask your dad for help or support. So it's a very controlling thing, right?
Yeah.
When you have a parent figure who tries to control you because then they can provide you with support.
Mm.
And so when you learn that you can stand up on your own, but you need to work for it, you need to get an education, you need to get, you know, good employment, because I was like, there's just no way I could return to my father.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I would be subject to that very conservative and restrictive lifestyle, which my sister was subject to.
Yeah.
And she rebelled horrendously against it. So, and you don't want to end up there. Mm-hmm. I had to, eventually my sister came to live with my husband and I, when she needed to get away from my father's home.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there were some scary moments in her life where I was basically her only rock and the only person she could rely on. But year 12 meant that I can do anything in my life and I can stand on my own and I can be educated and I can earn my own income and I don't have to rely on anyone else.
You know, when you say like that, it's almost as if everything worked out just all right because the breakup from mum and dad and then the situation with dad helped you realize that, hey, I'm capable. I can do this on my own. And then obviously high school,
yeah,
I can do this on my own. And so if you weren't challenged that way as a child, maybe you would have never achieved the heights you've achieved today.
Probably not, because before that happened, I was very sporty. So,
oh, were you playing basketball?
Netball, athletics, cross country.
Oh, you're a runner.
Yep. Don't look at me now. But I was quite fast on the netball court. Yeah. Got a lot of power in my legs, so I jump high for my height.
Yeah.
Which is unexpected, right? When you're on the court and you know, boing, intercept a ball.
Yeah.
People don't expect it, but I was really sporty, and then that moment when my parents separated, and it was like my mum said to me, if you get an education and you study hard, you can get a good job and you don't have to look back. That then made me refocus my energy from sport into studying.
And that became your escape.
And that was how I was like, right, well, I don't have to be subscribed to that particular aspect of Greek culture. I can move ahead and do what I want to do. With the support of my grandparents, of course, my mum's family, so.
Do you still fully connect with the Greek culture?
Not really.
Not really.
No, I married an Australian.
Yeah.
I think part of me as well was there is a significant risk marrying a Greek man because you can find yourself dragged back into those aspects of the Greek culture which don't align with your values.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just really wasn't interested in Greek men.
And so Shane got it.
And Shane got it.
What up, Shane? And you mentioned a couple of times values. What mm-hmm. are your top three values? What Top three things you value in life. What do you value most?
Mm-hmm. Honesty.
Honesty.
Integrity.
Yep.
And probably justice or equity, you know.
They say what we value is heavily connected with our childhood experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to piece together in my mind right now.
Well, I guess, you know, there was the social justice.
Yeah.
And when you live in a household where it's quite conservative and you don't really have much autonomy.
Yeah.
And you're looking at life and going, well, there's more to this. And I guess whether it is, you know, your own family or out in the community.
Yeah.
You know, like, people don't really have a right to restrict or impact other people's lives. Mm. And so, you know, making sure that, yep, some rules have to be in place. Obviously, some laws have to be there.
Yeah.
And finding that balance between not being too restrictive on people's choices and lifestyle, but also then making sure that the broader community is protected as well.
Yeah.
So I guess, and, you know, being honest about things. If you tell the truth, you don't have to remember thousands of lies, right?
I like
It's true. I mean, if you start lying about things, then you have to remember all the lies. But you never have to remember the truth because it just comes naturally.
So what are you most afraid of?
Not being able to retire.
You just want to slow down. Go.
Yeah, there's going to be a time when I have to slow down, and I think Shane will probably say it's time.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Can I slow down? Can I step back? Can I, you know, sometimes I think, yeah, it'd be really good just to, you know, not have so many responsibilities or, you know, more time for sewing and crocheting or exploring. But then I think, what if I get bored?
Yeah, yeah.
That might be a bit hard, I think.
So this is your third term serving the Palmerston Council and the people in the community of Palmerston. Looking back, let's say at the end of all your serving that you've done for Palmerston, you sit there and you look back, what is one thing you want to be remembered for?
Probably just having transformed the community and made the community more cohesive mm-hmm. in Palmerston.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, that's when you look back and go, have I made a big difference? And if the answer is yes, and that would be ideal.
Let's take it to the next level. Now, at the end of your life, what do you want to be remembered for?
Being an honest person.
Like if you say, Athena was what? She was honest.
She was honest, a good person, you know, cared for other people, nice values.
Yeah, you want to be remembered for your values and for the impact you've made on people. That's what I'm
yeah.
Does that summarize it?
Yes.
It does. We're reaching towards the end of this podcast episode. I think there's so many other questions I've got lined up in my head, but maybe we'll have to do a part two at some other point of time. But I really enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed it too.
I did. Well. Thanks. Thanks for having me along.
Yeah, that was quite cool. I guess it's only fair to finish up with a question on fulfillment
mm-hmm.
and some advice to the general public. Let me ask you this. Are you fulfilled right now in life?
Yeah, I think so. Yep, I really enjoy being mayor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think my kids are in a good place as well. I know my husband's quite happy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. I think I am fulfilled. I finished my law degree
yeah.
last year and was admitted as a lawyer
yeah.
In May this year.
Yeah.
And you know, I think I'm in a good place. I feel quite happy.
You achieved exactly what you wanted to achieve in life.
Yep.
And now I believe someone else in the camera out there, we've got an individual who might be a migrant, who might be, let's mm-hmm. say, a woman, who might be raised from a family where parents have divorced. Similar kind of story to where you came from and where you started, and that are looking at you and saying, wow, if she's been able to achieve that, I also want to be able to achieve this kind of heights. If you were mentoring them in 30 seconds, what advice would you give that young lady?
I think do what it is that you know you need to do and try not to worry about any negative people or negative things said about you. When I first ran for council, mm-hmm. I was told by a very close friend of mine who was very experienced in politics and elections that mm-hmm. being elected would have been really difficult for me because I'm a woman, mm-hmm. I have a funny name, mm-hmm. And I come from a different cultural background. And so the odds of getting elected were quite significant. And I was also an independent, so I didn't have any party.
Parties, yeah.
And he said to me, but if you are elected, it will really send shockwaves through the political parties mm-hmm. because they would never believe that an unsupported, so not party supported, yep. female, strange name, different cultural background could possibly get elected on their own.
Wow.
But it happened. So, and now I'm the mayor.
Yes, you are.
So, you can do it.
Yeah.
You just need to focus on what it is you want to achieve and don't worry about the negative comments and just focus. As long as you have someone supporting you, you will get there. So surround yourself with nice people too.
Mm-hmm. So it's the mindset and support that makes the best.
Yeah, and look, I was very fortunate that I did have my mum, my mum's parents, my mum's sister, my grandmother's sister, teachers at school, all supporting me. It really does make a difference when you've got people who encourage you and support you on your journey. And I still remember what my high school principal said to me. She said to me, men have had their way for 2,000 years.
Neck.
And it's time that women were at the forefront of everything in leadership. And so, you know, when you're like, yeah, that's true, probably 4,000 years that men have had, you know, mm-hmm. ruling the world in all the civilizations and things. So, you know, and I've said that to men when they, you know, get a bit, I don't know, overbearing, controlling. It's like, sit down. Men have had their way for over 2,000 years. You just need to accept it. Let a woman be in control.
What about young men that are also trying to make it?
Make it, but don't take down women to do it.
Perfect. What an advice. I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Athena.
Thank you.
And, yeah, thank you for being on the Discover Your podcast. Thank you so much to the City of Palmerston for sponsoring this episode. And if you haven't yet subscribed, jump on to Spotify, YouTube, the Discover You podcast. And we have today with us the mayor of the City of Palmerston, Athena Pascoe-Bear.
Thank you.
Giving a shout out to our sponsor for today, the City of Palmerston. Just want to give our sponsor a shout out to a sponsor who is not only holding it together, the community, but also giving back to podcasts like ours and wanting to see the community grow, wanting to see people in the community grow. Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed our content, please follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and TikTok. And if you really want to support us, please support us on Patreon, Subscribestar, and Crypto. I personally want to say thank you to all of you that are following us. And I want to make a promise that if you follow us, if you subscribe to our channel, that we will keep producing the best, highest form of quality content to add value to your life and help you find fulfillment in life. Thank you.